Boxes were all filled with gifts, big and small. But sharing pure love is the greatest gift of all. Stay cozy, my people, and have a Boss year.
Get into the holiday spirit with Boss and our ultimate gifting edit. Visit your nearest store or explore our curated selection online at boss.com.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
In the early morning hours of May 9th, 2022, a quarter moon hung over Orlando, Florida, casting a pale glow across the rows of townhouses in Econ Landing, a manicured subdivision that promised quiet streets and family living. The night was still, broken only by the hum of traffic on the nearby toll road and the steady chirp of crickets. That was until 1:30 a.m. when Marco Gonzalez was jolted awake by the sound of his four-month-old son crying.
At that time, we were up because I have a son that at that time was 4 months old. He wake up to be fed. So basically, we were about to get back to sleep and we hear the gunshot.
After hearing what Marco believed was a single gunshot, he then heard screaming, shouting, and crying. Knowing his home was equipped with a Google Nest camera over the garage, Marco grabbed his phone.
I wasn't really sure, so I have to open the app and hear that.
After opening the app, Marco rewound the footage a few seconds to see what the camera had captured. But when he pressed play, he couldn't see anyone. He could only hear them. Early the next morning, Marco answered a knock on his front door. It was the Orange County Police.
He asked if the camera captured the moment, so I said yes, and he requested that video.
Marco had no idea the sounds recorded outside his home would become the most important evidence in a high-profile murder trial. Join me now as we examine the tragic murder of Adrian Payne, a former NBA first-round draft pick and Michigan State basketball star. You'll hear how a late-night attempt to calm a dispute ended in sudden gunfire, how conflicting stories left jurors weighing two very different accounts of what had happened outside a quiet Florida townhouse, and how in the end, the truth rested on just a few seconds of captured audio. On the afternoon of Sunday, May 8th, 2022, 29-year-old Lawrence Doherty was at his father Larry's house for a Mother's Day celebration. A barber by trade, Lawrence lived just a few minutes away with his partner, Tatiana Mesa, and their children.
He is the head of our household. He's the provider for our family. He's a man who leads our home with love and guidance. He's the father that every child deserves, a father who gives his last for them, who puts love above everything, and even turns cooking into a moment of joy so that his children know that fun and love live in the heart of our home.
Lawrence and Tatiana had brought their 10-year-old son, Havivan, with them to the family gathering that day. It was the kind of party where people stay later than planned, and maybe have a few more drinks than intended. Sometime that night, Lawrence and Tatiana allegedly began arguing, and by 1:30 a.m., when it was time to head home, they left separately. Lawrence could have walked the short distance back to his townhouse on Egret Shores Drive. Instead, his father offered him a ride home.
Around 1:30 in the morning, me, my son, and my dad went to my house. My father was taking me and my son home. And as we arrived, I see the car parked at the corner of my home, and I automatically assumed it was Tara. So I thought it was weird that she was parked right there, because she would typically park in the driveway or in front of the house. And so I walk over there to greet her, to say, hey, you know, why are you parked here?
Lawrence knew the vehicle. It belonged to Tatiana's friend, Tara Walker. But the car was parked oddly, a few houses down on a corner. As Lawrence approached what he believed was Tara's car, a large man stepped out. At about 6'10 and 250 pounds, he towered over Lawrence, who was roughly 5'8 himself and weighed at least 100 pounds less. Lawrence recognized him as Tara's boyfriend, Adrian Payne, but only met him briefly before in passing.
One time, he showed up to my girlfriend's mother's Thanksgiving or something like that. He showed up unannounced.
Almost immediately, Lawrence says he sensed trouble.
Mr. Payne gets out of the car, and when he gets out of the car, he's looking down at me. He has his hand in his waistband, and I can see, like, something silver sticking out on the side of his hip with his hand on it.
According to Lawrence, the object looked like a firearm tucked in Payne's waistband.
And I asked him, what are you doing here? And he said, I'm not playing with you, I'll smoke you. I said, what? I threw my hands in the air, and I started freaking out.
From the car, Lawrence's father could see that his son was upset and rolled down his window to check on him.
My dad rolls down the window and asks me, is everything okay? And I told him, I don't know. So I go inside of my home. I retrieve my firearm so I could safely get my son in the house.
Lawrence said it took him about 45 seconds to retrieve a gun he had in the house before returning back outside.
And so as I return back outside, I see Mr. Payne has moved his car up even more, and he's gotten out of his car again.
Lawrence saw Adrian's move closer as an escalation.
And so I'm standing in my driveway and I'm asking him, why are you here? What are you doing here? Why are you here? Can you please leave? Can you please leave? And he's just staring at me. I thought I was gonna die. He's outside my house. He's telling me he's gonna smoke me. I have my son outside, I have my father outside. He's there by himself. I have to get my son safe. I just thought he was gonna kill me and my son and my father. And I didn't know what was gonna happen. I said, can you please leave? Why are you here? Can you please leave? What are you here for? He didn't say anything. He was just staring at me. I was saying, why are you here? You need to leave. You need to leave. You need to leave. Why are you here? I mean, I was in my driveway the whole time when I was saying, why are you here? You need to leave. You need to leave. Why are you here? I seen him going like this, pulling his hand up, like he's raising a gun towards me. And I shot one time and I called the police and I put my son in the house.
Just after 1:30 a.m., Lawrence called 911.
While I was on the phone with the police, I put my son in the house. I'm on the phone with the police. And I saw my father go over to Mr. Payne's to see if everything was okay. And I can hear him telling her, find a piece of plastic so I could try to stop the bleeding.
Corporal Garrett Morris with the Orange County Sheriff's Office arrived within minutes of the shooting.
So the victim, when I located him, he was in the driver's seat of a silver vehicle. And he was with his left foot outside of the vehicle and his right foot inside the vehicle. He had a gunshot wound to his chest and he was unresponsive. The defendant's father was near the victim, and so was the victim's girlfriend.
It was clear Larry Doherty and Tara Walker had been trying to save Adrian's life, but because of his size, couldn't move him from the driver's seat to a flat surface. When Corporal Morris arrived, he had the strength they needed.
At that point, I put on my gloves and I got him out of the vehicle. The defendant's father assisted a little bit, and then I started CPR. In this case, it was obvious that he had been shot.
Paramedics soon joined him, but before Adrian was transported, Corporal Morris checked for weapons.
I checked for weapons on whoever I'm in contact with, and in that case, it was the victim.
After not finding any weapons, Adrian was rushed to Advan Health Hospital, just 5 minutes away, where he was pronounced dead.
There was a moment when I hit my 40s when things just started to feel off, where my body clearly started doing its own thing. Sleep got weird, my focus was off, and then there was my hair. It just stopped growing like it used to. It felt thinner, dry, and brittle, to the point where I stopped going to get my hair trimmed at the hairdresser because I wanted to preserve as much of my hair as I could. And it didn't matter what I tried to solve the problem, nothing worked, until I found Nutrafol, the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. And you can feel great about what you're putting into your body with Nutrafol because Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF Contents certified, the gold standard in third-party certification for supplements. And while many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy using hair counts, pull tests, and other tools to measure growth, texture, quality, and more. And one of the great things about Nutrafol is that they've made adding it to your daily routine simple. Just go to Nutrafol.com to make your purchase online. No prescription needed, and free shipping and automated deliveries help you stay consistent. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you save up to 20%. Get free one-on-one naturopathic doctor consults and a Headspace meditation membership. For me, Nutrafol finally felt like something that was built for where I'm at in life, backed by science and focused on root causes of hair thinning, and honestly, worth it. I've been using Nutrafol for almost 2 years now, and the texture and health of my hair is night and day from where it was before. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Minds of Madness listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code MADNESS. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code MADNESS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code MADNESS. We've also provided a link in our show notes.
Back at the scene of the shooting, police were already moving forward in their investigation into what had occurred. Lawrence Doherty was taken into custody while his father and son were also briefly detained. Handcuffed in the back of a squad car, Lawrence repeated the same account he'd given to 911, that he'd fired in self-defense, believing the much larger man confronting him was armed. Adrian D'Angelo Payne was a former NBA basketball star whose life story was one of remarkable perseverance against overwhelming odds. His story began in Dayton, Ohio, in a neighborhood where struggle was the norm. From the beginning, life tested him. His father spent time in prison during his childhood, leaving his mother Gloria to raise him on his own. She was his anchor until the night she collapsed from an asthma attack inside their home. 13-year-old Adrian held his mother as she took her last breath. Losing his mother left him unmoored, but then his grandmother stepped in, becoming his guardian. Strict and faith-driven, his grandmother was determined to shield him from drugs, gangs, and crime that claimed so many kids in Dayton. She gave him church, structure, and accountability, when he needed it the most. Still, Adrian's path wasn't easy. Diagnosed with a learning disability, he struggled in school, often ridiculed by his classmates who saw him as slow. By his own admission, he didn't know how to read as a teenager. That began to change when he grew into his 6'10" frame and discovered basketball. At first, it was just raw size and energy, but soon became more than just a sport. Recruiting letters came from top basketball programs across the country, but if he wanted to play college ball, he was going to need to get his academics in order. For years after school, Adrian worked with volunteer teachers one-on-one, 3 extra hours of reading and math before heading to basketball practice. Against the odds, Adrian earned a scholarship at Michigan State University, and it was there he grew into a standout player. But his time on campus wasn't defined by points and rebounds alone. It was also marked by a friendship that captured hearts far beyond the game. A bond he formed with an 8-year-old cancer patient, Lacey Hallsworth. To boost her spirits while undergoing treatments, Adrian visited her in the hospital, brought her to games, and even walked her onto the court. To him, she was family, and the friendship revealed his instinct to care for others as much of his love for the game. On the court, Adrian was a star center during his time at Michigan State. He could have turned professional after his 3rd year, but chose to stay until he finished his degree. After graduating, Adrian became the first in his family to earn a college degree, and soon after, he was drafted in the first round of the 2014 NBA draft, beginning a professional career that took him to the Atlanta Hawks, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Orlando Magic before several years overseas. Although his journey had ups and downs, his resilience remained consistent, and by 2022, Adrian was living back in the Orlando area, building a life with his girlfriend, Tara Walker.
Hi, I'm Tara Walker. I'm Adrian's girlfriend. I was in a relationship with him 5 years.
When police arrived on the morning of May 9th, they found Tara distraught, desperately trying to save her boyfriend's life. After Lawrence Doherty was taken into custody, police began questioning Tara about what she had witnessed and what she knew about Lawrence.
He was my best friend's boyfriend, Tatiana Mesa. Tatiana had texted me and asked me to meet her at her house in 15 minutes.
Despite the late hour, Tara believed she knew why Tatiana had asked her to come over. As a close friend of both Tatiana and Lawrence, Tara was often called in to help to mediate their arguments when things got out of hand, and according to Tara, the couple fought often. After receiving Tatiana's message, Tara phoned Adrian.
He was on his way back to my house. It's Mother's Day night. He had left and he was coming back, and I told him that I was going to go to Tatiana's house to see what was going on, that she had asked me to come to her house and that she had called the police. He said he was coming off the highway and that he would meet me there.
Tara asked Adrian not to go, but he told her he was already on his way. Adrian was driving his own vehicle, a car Tara had been driving for months while he was overseas, which explains why, when Lawrence came home that night, he believed the car parked nearby was Tara's. By the time Tara arrived, the confrontation between Lawrence and Adrian was already underway.
Larry, his father, is parked in the middle of the street near the stop sign, and Adrian's car is about 7 houses down, and Lawrence and him are outside of the car having a conversation. I stopped in the middle of the street. Larry was standing outside of his vehicle. I rolled down my window. I lowered my phone down because I was on the phone with Adrian. And he told me to get back, that he was going to get his gun. And I was like, what are you talking about, Larry? That's Adrian. That's Armani's dad. That's my boyfriend. And then he said, oh, that's a big fella. I'd never seen him before. And I was like, yeah. So I put the phone back to my ear. I was looking straight. I see that Adrian has his arm on top of the car.
And he has one arm over the door. He's in between the crease of the door. Lawrence is standing on the side of here, the side of him. And I heard him say something like, "Get on, Lawrence. I'm not worried about you." Lawrence backed up. Adrian closed the door. Lawrence walked to the house, and Adrian walked over to me.
Up to this point, Tara and Lawrence's accounts lined up fairly closely. But from there, their version of events diverged dramatically. According to Tara, she and Adrian had gone there simply to prevent violence between Lawrence and Tatiana. She also explained to police why Adrian moved his car closer to the house.
Adrian's talking to me. I asked him, "Are you okay, babe?" He said, "Yeah." "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah." "Go back to your car and just pull up, and I'm going to park right here," which was like guest parking on the side of the house. He walks back to his car. I park my car where I say I'm going to park it. He pulls up to the spot where we were originally at, where Larry and myself was located. So I parked my car. I walked over to Adrian. He opened his car door. He stuck his left leg out. I thought he was getting out the car. Had his hand on the steering wheel. And I said, "Babe, don't get out the car. I'm going to go see what's going on with Tatiana." And I turned around. I probably took about 5 steps. And then I seen Lawrence coming from in between the cars. Like, there was another car and then a Mercedes, which is his car.
According to Tara, Lawrence appeared intoxicated, and she soon realized something was wrong.
And he had his arm under his shirt, and he came to the edge of it. I stopped. I asked him not to draw his weapon. What was he doing? His dad was asking what was he doing. He came down to the end with a gun under his shirt. He took the gun out of his shirt. I asked him not to raise his weapon. I started to yell his name, Lawrence. And then from there, he asked us why are you here? He asked a couple times, maybe like 2 to 3 times. And I tried to explain to him, Tatiana asked me to be here. It seemed like he was intoxicated.
Tara insisted Adrian had no weapon and wasn't threatening Lawrence. She also said she was only a few steps away when the gun went off.
I turned around to run towards Adrian get to him. His dad grabbed me and spun me around and told me that I needed to run, to grab Habian and run. I ran over to the, I walked over, I tried to run, my legs felt like bricks. I went to him, I opened the car door, he jumped him onto my arms. He was already crying. I put him down because I couldn't carry him, and I told him to run. So we started to run.
Tara then turned her attention back to Adrian in the car.
Larry ran over to Adrian. I went to the driver's side. I put my keys on top of the car, and I looked to see if he was alive. I ran around to the passenger side. I tried to readjust his head because he was leaning over into the middle with his head up, and I needed to fix him so I could try to do compressions because I couldn't get him out the car. I tell Larry, "You have to help me. He's not breathing no more." And he starts screaming. He leans down and he starts doing them with me. So we're both pushing on his chest.
For Orange County detectives, the basic facts about the case were clear. Adrian and Lawrence had a confrontation outside Lawrence's home. Lawrence fired a single shot into Adrian's chest and immediately admitted to being the shooter. The question was whether the shot was justifiable self-defense or murder. In Florida, the answer often hinges on the state's Stand Your Ground law, which allows deadly force if someone believes their life is in imminent danger. Unlike many states, there's no duty to retreat before using lethal force. According to Lawrence, he believed Adrian was armed and raising a weapon at the moment he pulled the trigger. He feared not only for his own life, but for the lives of his father and son. While Lawrence was being questioned, officers searched the scene, and what they found, or rather didn't find, raised doubts about his account, because there was no gun in Adrian's car or on his body. What they did find was a kitchen knife on the passenger side floorboard, but Tara told investigators she'd accidentally left it there weeks earlier. Detectives also secured security footage from neighbor Marco Gonzalez's Nest Cam. The audio was critical. It captured Tara pleading with Lawrence not to pull out his gun just moments before the shot.
Put out for your gun.
The recording showed that at least in Tara's mind, Lawrence was the aggressor. If Adrian was unarmed, as the evidence suggested, then Lawrence's claim of self-defense was on shaky ground. After his interrogation, Lawrence was arrested and charged with first-degree murder, but was later reduced to second degree. From the beginning, Lawrence Doherty's defense attorney, Harold Thompson, signaled a strategy, arguing the shooting was justified under Florida's Stand Your Ground law. Thompson told jurors that Lawrence had every reason to feel threatened by Adrian Payne that night.
When Tara Walker pulled up, Larry Doherty told her to get back. I'm about to get my gun. She said, no, don't do that. That's my son's father. That's my boyfriend. Oh, I've never seen him before. That's a big fella. How big is he?
He was trying to be intimidating. He wasn't coming to sing a Christmas carol outside his house at 1:30 in the morning. He wasn't delivering for Uber. He wasn't delivering for Amazon. He had no right to come to his house. Now, if you believe he has the right to be in the street, just parked outside, just waiting, lying in wait for someone with your car running, headlights on, just sitting in the car, and then when someone walks up thinking that you're someone you know, you hop out with a threatening gesture. A 6'8", 247-pound man steps out and in a threatening manner steps over to him and say, I'll smoke you. What you want to do? That's an aggravated assault with a weapon. That's a felony, a forcible felony. After you threaten the person and he goes in the house, by the time you come back out, you should be gone. But guess what? He moved up a little bit closer. Mr. Doherty's son was still outside.
Thompson also cast doubt on whether Adrian had truly been armed, suggesting the crime scene itself might have been mishandled.
The crime scene was contaminated. That's very important. It's so very important to this case. Fatal to the state's case. It's fatal to the state's case. There was evidence that was not properly secured and processed. So let's talk about Deputy Garrett Morris. He was very forthcoming and candid, professional. He arrived at the scene. You could see his body camera. He rushed over and basically he was administering life-saving measures to try to revive or try to just get some sense of keeping Mr. Payne viable until paramedics can arrive. He did a brief search of Mr. Payne's fanny pack. He did not see any weapons in there, but he did not search the vehicle at all, okay? That's pretty much all he did. After this, fire and rescue arrived, and then Deputy Garrett says he maintained the crime scene. Just himself, just Deputy Garrett, maintained the crime scene. Put up crime scene tape. He held the area around the car until homicide and forensics units arrived. The state published the body-worn camera footage, and the footage did not reveal that he maintained his area around the car. In fact, there is no evidence that the area around the car was even secured or maintained free of contamination or free of manipulation. And again, he did not search the interior of the vehicle.
Before deputies fully secured the area, both Tara Walker and Larry Doherty had already entered Adrian's vehicle in attempts to render aid, but according to Lawrence, Tara's actions looked less like first aid and more like a search.
And I see her go through the back seat. She goes through both of the back seats. She goes through the front seat. She goes through the glove compartment and she just runs. She runs to the other side and we didn't see Tara until the police arrived. Her brother and her father came and I was just so confused because they had my son and my father and me like chambered away and she's just frolicking around. I was just confused.
Based on Lawrence's statements, Thompson argued that the gun could have been removed from the vehicle before investigators arrived, leaving no trace. He also pointed to Adrian's autopsy as supporting evidence.
I'm Dr. Hansen. I'm an associate medical examiner and I'm a forensic pathologist.
Dr. Hansen testified that a single bullet caused two wounds, passing through Adrian's arm before entering his chest.
The wounds do not align, but if you lift the arm and turn it slightly, then the wound through the arm continues into the chest and continues down in through the body. It appears to be a distant gunshot wound that's more than 2 to 3 feet away because there's no soot, there's no powder tattooing.
According to Thompson, That pattern was consistent with someone raising an arm horizontally, positioning consistent, he claimed, with aiming a handgun.
The trajectory of the bullet wound that Mr. Payne was inflicted with is consistent with this movement. Thumb down, arms raised. How is this not consistent with someone trying to aim a firearm at you if you're left-handed? He was left-handed. A gun could be aimed like this. This is consistent.
Needless to say, police and prosecutors saw this evidence very differently. To them, the medical findings suggested Adrian had simply been resting his arm on the open car door or possibly raising it to shield himself when Lawrence fired. For investigators, the evidence told a clear story. Lawrence Doherty had been the aggressor. He escalated a late-night confrontation, armed himself, and shot an unarmed man who posed no immediate threat. After more than 3 years of legal proceedings, the case finally went before a jury. Their task was to decide whether the shooting of Adrian Payne was justified self-defense or murder. The defense framed Lawrence as a man who'd been confronted outside his own home, threatened by a much larger man, and forced to make a split-second decision.
We acknowledge this is a very sensitive, sad situation. Both families have been impacted. So out of respect for both families, this is a tragedy. But Mr. Doherty didn't go looking for trouble. Neither Mr. Lawrence Doherty or Lawrence Doherty's fiance, Tatiana Mesa, invited Mr. Payne over. Tara Walker advised her boyfriend, Mr. Payne, not to go over to Mr. Doherty's house. She admitted to that fact, but why? Why was he there? Mr. Doherty's actions were justified under the circumstances of this case, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Doherty was standing his ground. The state wants you to believe that my client just comes out the house guns blazing, just shooting at someone for no reason in cold blood, without adequate provocation, without it being in fear, just willy-nilly. Use your common sense, that's not what happened.
The prosecution painted a much different picture. Adrian was unarmed, standing in a public street when Lawrence left his house, retrieved a gun, and escalated the conflict.
There's words exchanged, but that's not the point that the shooting happens. That's when things took a turn. The defendant came back outside the house. He didn't stay in the house. He didn't lock the door. He didn't call 911. None of that. Instead, he arms himself with a firearm, taking the time to do that. He comes back out. Now, you're going to hear from several witnesses in the case, the primary one being Tara Walker, who was present and witnessed the shooting, that the defendant appeared to be intoxicated, that he was upset, that he was belligerent. Now, you're going to hear from Tara Walker, and she's going to tell you the victim didn't have a weapon, that he didn't threaten a weapon. The evidence in this case will be clear. This is not a case of self-defense. This is not a case of someone standing their ground. You know, in a self-defense or stand your ground situation, the facts matter. And the facts in this case are not someone defending themselves. They're someone being the aggressor, taking aggressive action, arming themselves, and committing a murder.
The prosecution argued that Adrian was unarmed and standing in a public street where he had every right to be. Lawrence, they said, chose to walk into his house, retrieve a gun, and return outside to escalate the conflict. And that's where the neighbor's Nest camera became the cornerstone of their case.
When Tara Walker sees him, she notices that he seems to have a gun. And she says, and you can hear on the audio, don't take your gun out. Lawrence, don't take your gun out. We were called here. But then she told you he didn't listen. He does take the gun. You can hear the escalation in her voice. While you can't see the incident, you can hear it play by play from her voice on the video and the shots themselves. And you hear just after that, after he's been warned, after he's been told why they're there, you hear the shot ring out, and then you hear screams, because the defendant had killed Adrian Payne for no justifiable reason. And you hear that in that surveillance. It wasn't justified. It wasn't in response to a reasonable threat. It was just because he was intoxicated and he was mad. Just because that's how he felt like, what he felt like doing that night. Not justified.
The state's strongest piece of physical evidence was that no weapon was found on Adrian or in his car, directly contradicting Lawrence's testimony. And while the evidence suggested the scene may have been tampered with, they offered no evidence beyond speculation. Ultimately, the case came down to credibility. Lawrence testified for the defense. Tara Walker testified for the prosecution.
Did he have a weapon?
No.
And did you witness him make any threats to the defendant at that time?
No.
And were you in a position that if he would have made such threats, you would have heard them?
Yes.
I don't have any further questions.
When it came to credibility, jurors had little reason to doubt Tara. Yes, she was dating the victim, but she also had been Lawrence's closest friend for years. Lawrence even described himself, Tatiana, and Tara as best friends. And then there was the hard evidence. The surveillance audio, the lack of a weapon, the witness accounts. All of it supported Tara's testimony. The only claims to the contrary came from Lawrence himself. He was the only one who said Adrian had a gun. The only one who said Tara rummaged through the car after the shooting. The only one who said Adrian threatened him with the words, "I'll smoke you." The prosecution closed with these words.
He was not justified in doing what he did. Again, I want to emphasize to you that the victim in this case never set foot at his house, never knocked on his door, never stepped in his driveway, didn't park in his driveway, didn't park in front of his house, didn't step on his grass. He wasn't defending his castle. He saw a vehicle that he recognized. He went over there at 1:30 a.m., had the person roll the window down, and that's what started the engagement between the two. He did that. He's not defending his castle. And then he went back in, armed himself, and came back and shot the person in his car on the street.
It took the jury less than 90 minutes to deliver their unanimous verdict.
We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of second-degree murder.
At sentencing, the judge imposed a life minimum mandatory term, ensuring Lawrence will spend the rest of his life in prison without the possibility of release. The tragic irony in this case is that Adrian Payne was murdered for doing the same thing he'd spent his entire life doing, trying to help others. He was there to assist his girlfriend, mediate a potential domestic violence situation, to help a struggling couple resolve their dispute in a peaceful manner. They cared about Tatiana and Lawrence, and they cared about his three children. But instead of gratitude for his concern, Adrian received a bullet to his chest. In the months following the senseless murder of Adrian Payne, his partner Tara Walker gave birth to Adrian's youngest son, a boy she named Armani Payne.
My son is only 3 years old. He's far too young to understand what happened and why Daddy is never coming home. He asks me all the time, can we go visit his dad in heaven? What do you say to that? How do you explain that someone took your dad from the child? How do I tell him? My son will grow up without any real memories of Adrian. He only has pictures and the stories of his legacy online. And Lawrence, may you never forget this. You didn't just take a life. You broke a family. You destroyed a child. You took so much more than you'll ever know. In the words of Adrian, basketball will forever be my heart, but my kids are my beat. And for that, Adrian will live forever through them.
Adrian reached the heights of college basketball and heard his name called in the first round of the NBA draft. Yet, his true legacy was always less about points and rebounds and more about who he was off the court, in the classroom, and in the community. He was a man who overcame all odds just to be accepted academically into college. 2 years later, he became an academic all-conference selection at Michigan State. His brother Antoine remembers Adrian being an inspiration to the whole family.
Adrian wasn't just my brother. He was my inspiration. He was my friend. He was a man that I looked up to. But more than anything, he was a father. He loved his sons with his whole heart, and they were his world. He wanted nothing more than to raise them into strong, respectful young men and successful young men. He was present in their lives, teaching them, guiding them, showing them what love and discipline and dedication really looked like. We all watched how hard my brother not only worked on the court, but off of it. We witnessed his determination, his grind, and his sacrifices he made to become the man and the father he was. Adrian inspired so many, but for us, his family, we felt the love, we saw the pain. He pushed through, and we knew the effort it took. He was building a future for his sons and his family, and everything he did was for them. Now they have to grow up without him. He won't be here to teach them how to throw a ball and how to navigate life or how to be men. They never got the chance to meet his youngest son, who was born after his death. The kind of loss can't be measured. Adrian's legacy will live on through his sons and through the people he inspired and through the love he gave so freely. The holes in his absence as left, his sons will still ask why. Why isn't my father here? Why was he taken from them? And there are no good answers.
Adrian Payne inspired thousands with his story of resilience. But for those closest to him, the losses measured in the absence felt every day, in the questions his children will grow up asking, and in the silence of moments he'll never get to share with them. And yet, his love remains. It lives on in his sons, in the people he inspired, and in the legacy of a man who, even in his final hours, was simply trying to help. Follow The Minds of Magnus on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.